We will open this retreat with an ancient Vedic prayer. It's actually from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and it is traditionally chanted at the start of a spiritual gathering in which the purpose is to attain God realization. And so our sacred singers are going to chant this for us, but you can all feel free to join in if the spirit moves you. And if not, be in that state in which the prayer ends with the triple shanti. Shanti means both peace, but more deeply silence. And it's a triple silence, a silence of the ego, a silence of the soul, and a silence of God. But it begins with an invocation and a prayer to God asking, lead us from asat to sat. Asat oma sat gamaya. Sat is the real. Asat is the unreal. Lead us from the unreal to the real. By the way, it's this prayer that inspired the name Satyoga to be created, because this was the purpose of our path, and this prayer, in a way, epitomizes the purpose of our work. So, lead us from the unreal to the real, and then the second line, lead us from tamas, the tamasic state, to the state in which the jyoti bindu is lit up. Tamasoma jyotir gamaya. Tamas means psychological and spiritual ignorance and darkness. Jyoti is the light, but it's not the light of the sun or these lights. It is the light of God that shines within the third eye when one has become completely surrendered to that supreme reality, the eye of Shiva. The Egyptians referred to it as the eye of Ra. But it is when this light lights up that the energy spreads through the pineal gland and the hypothalamus and throughout the whole brain and the central nervous system and lights up one's entire pranic body and energy field. And so we are being led to the complete opening of that supreme light within. And then finally, as a result of that, mrityor ma amritam kamaya. Mrityo is death. Amrita is the nectar of immortality. Lead us from the world of death, from identification with a mortal body, to the realization that we are immortal spirit, eternal, timeless spirit, and that we are already that now. So lead us to the truth of our liberation here and now. And the way to do that? The triple shanti, very simple. Silence the ego, mental chatter, bring the soul into silence so that its sutratma is no longer in movement and the soul's orientation is toward God, and the silence of God fills all the vehicles and there is complete transmutation and transfiguration. And this is why we are here for this retreat. So, please, sacred singers, lead us in this prayer and lead us to the light. Thank you.
Ma Satkamaya Tamaso Major Dir Kamaya Mrityor Mantam Kamaya Om Shanti 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 Asato Ma Satkamaya Tamaso Major Dir Kamaya Mrityor Mantam Kamaya Om Shanti 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 Asato Ma Satkamaya Tamaso Major Dir Kamaya Mrityor Mantam Kamaya Om Shanti Shanti Shanti
Major Dir Kamaya,
Buddha, Allah, Cristo, Krishna, Tao. Om Namah Shivaya. Shivoham, Om Tat Sat. Namaste. Thank you all for that beautiful rendition of this very extraordinary prayer that has in a way structured all of the religious traditions of Kali Yuga. I often have to modify the title of the retreat just before we start based on the meditations I've had leading up to it. So we're now calling it Passing Through the Great Gateless Gate, which I'm sure you're familiar with that phrase from the very famous book of Zen koans. But I'm including that word here not just because of the Zen allusion, but because of the archetypal nature of the gate that is, in fact, paradoxically a non-gate. And this is the gate through which one must pass to attain the face of God and to become one with that face. And in that, one actually becomes the gate, a manifestation of the gate to God for others. Maybe, Swati, you should erase that because I'm going to need to use the board to write a bunch of other material on it soon. The title for the retreat first came to me while I was reading a commentary on the Quran by a man whose title is the Bab. He is a forerunner of what is now the Baha'i religion, and actually there were people who followed him. And it was called the religion of Babism for a long time, but it was very, very persecuted in Iran. And I think it's fairly extinct now. But the Bab's writings are extraordinary, and they were brought in by Baha'u'llah into the founding texts of the canon of Baha'i. And his writings are very spiritually significant even today. And he took this title, the Bab, which means the gate in Persian. And I think it's Persian, perhaps it's Arabic. I'm not even sure now that I think about it. But he was from Persia, from Shiraz. And in the Quran and in the Sufi tradition, especially the Shiite version of that tradition, becoming a gate, it was a technical term for a level of spiritual attainment. But there were different levels of the gate. There were lower gates and middle gates, and then the great gate. And so we're referring to that final ultimate gate. But his writings regarding gaining the status of gatehood through one's spiritual purification became the inspiration for formulating this retreat, since we all have to do that in order to pass through this gate. And so I think before we go too far, I want to clarify the implications of going through this gate and exactly what it brings about, what it entails, what it requires letting go of. So I made a long list of them, let's say, pairs of opposites. So let me see if I can make this as coherent as possible. There's the gate. Doesn't look like much, but, you know, God's approach is very humble. So we already have three of the opposites. We are being led from darkness to light, from death to immortality, and of course, most importantly, from the unreal to the real. Let me bring in some quantum physics right now to say we go also from a collapsed Q2 wave function state to decollapsed wave functions. Q2 means quantum and qualium wave functions, which are what create the particularities of the way the world appears to us. We could also use Bohmian physics and say we are being led from the explicate order to the implicate order. And we'll go into exactly what that entails later on. From conditioned existence to unconditioned being. And from the phenomenal to the noumenal. From the creation to the creator. From samsara to nirvana. Swati, I'm going to let you write the rest of them while I sit over here and relax and take it easy and talk about some of these at more length. So thank you. I appreciate your help.
List.
So the next one is we are led from the human, our human nature, to the divine nature. We're led from a state of lostness to the Tao, to finding the way. We are led from suffering or affliction to bliss, or mahasukha, the great happiness, depending on your spiritual tradition. From ignorance to gnosis or jnana. And And perhaps most important on a practical level for our self-transformation, we are being led from a state of narcissism to egolessness. The structure of the ego today in this postmodern world is narcissistic, and for the most part, very unhealthy infantile narcissism. And that's what makes it so difficult to even want to cross the gate, and so urgent that we do it. So we're going from a determined state to an indeterminate. Indeterminacy is freedom. And we have to become indeterminate to ourselves in order to recognize the indeterminacy or the total freedom of God consciousness and enjoy it rather than be afraid of not being able to control it. So traditionally, we go from bondage to liberation or freedom. And I wrote here from appearance to the unmanifest, but that really is the same as phenomenal to noumenal, so you don't need to write that. Time to eternity. And we go from a state of karma to a state of being karmatit.
Is there more to do with it?
Yeah, there's a lot more, so write small. We are in a state now where we are subject to action-reaction. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. We're subject to the consequences of our actions, even if that happens in a delayed way. And when we pass through the gate, we're beyond the effects of karma. To use a Christian term, we go from being sinners to being saved, and to even becoming manifestations of the of God. Theosis is the goal of Christianity, which means deification or divinization. We go from a state of jiva to Shiva. We go from a state of paranoia to a state of metanoia. From finite to infinite. From hatred to love. From multiplicity to non-duality. From the false to the true. From difference to sameness. Because once you're in non-duality, everything is the same. Everything is a manifestation of the infinite self.
Can you say the last three? Sorry, multiplicity?
Non-duality.
Okay, false.
Difference, sameness. From the impure to the pure. And from a state of aberration to perfection. There are all kinds of aberrations in Kali Yuga. Everything seems to go wrong. Once you pass through the gate, everything is realized as perfect. We go from a state in which we are empty of essence to one in which we are filled with the Buddha nature. Or from ordinary mind to mind nature, to use the Bonpo expression. We go from the belief that there are two truths, a relative and an absolute, to one truth. We go from a state of mental chatter to a state of inner silence. We go from a state of constant conceptualization to the non-conceptual. And last but not least, we go from a state of making effort to one of effortlessness. That's the most difficult of all. There's nothing harder than effortlessness for the ego. If you can achieve effortlessness, then you're there. But the ego has a very hard time, you know, and these teachings have been given, you know, to the point of becoming cliches. Be here now, remain as you are. You don't have to do anything. You're perfect already. You're already self-realized, already liberated. Everyone hears this, but no one believes it. And everyone thinks, I've got to make effort. I've got to do something. How do I do it? What do I do? And there's nothing to do because you're not even a doer. It's getting rid of that illusion, dropping it, that brings you to the state of effortlessness. And that is the quickest way to pass through the gate. So now, the secret of this, it's not even really a secret, but it's hard to grasp if this makes sense to you, which is that once you pass through the gate, none of this is any longer true. When you pass through the gate, you realize there never was a gate. There was only non-duality. There's only God. That's all there ever was. There weren't all of this multiplicity of individual beings. Your ego is an illusion. All the phenomena of the world are illusions. They're illusions when they are perceived through the lens of duality. When it's perceived through non-duality, then it's real. But then what is perceived is very different from what is perceived through subject-object split mind duality. So the healing of the split mind brings one into literally another reality, the reality. And then one realizes even the unreality of the illusion was only an illusion. Even the illusion didn't really exist because it happened only to an illusory character who never really existed. But that's very hard to grasp if you believe you are really somebody right now and a person in a world that feels real to you. If you feel that, this will be very difficult to grasp. But when you know that God is real, you will know that you cannot be real, because right now, where are we except in the mind of God? And so, yes, we are real as figures in the mind of God and manifestations of that intelligence that has formed itself into a drama of self-realization, of self-revelation, but that entire drama is happening in God's mind, in eternity, not in time or space. And even quantum physics is now coming to the conclusion space and time have to be given up as actual facets of reality. They were simply theoretical attempts to understand how to make sense of this, and now they recognize, no, space and time are both delusional. And there's many, many scientific internet videos you can watch on that subject, so I won't belabor that point. But the key point is that phenomenologically, we have to get to that point where we perceive this directly. Theory is completely irrelevant in this. Everything depends on practice. Everything. And if you study all of the spiritual traditions, to which you can now add quantum physics, all of them, well, maybe physics doesn't include this, but all of them have basically the same practice. Whether you're Buddhist or you're Advaita Vedantin or Kashmir Shaivite or Taoist or mystical Christian or Kabbalistic Jew or Sufi or alchemist or hermeticist, all of them say that the practice is to attain total inner silence and one pointed focus on the self. That's it. That is what will get you through the gate, and nothing else will. It's that simple. If you want to pass through that gate, you have to conquer your mind. Your mind's tendency, its habit of producing incessant chattering thoughts, most of which are completely unimportant, and producing them against your will, and producing images, memories, reveries, daydreams, all kinds of scattered thoughts. We could have added scattered to one pointed on this map. The ego mind is completely scattered. It cannot keep itself focused. And we have an epidemic of attention deficit disorder. But I'd say every ego suffers from that disorder. Maybe not to a clinical level, but it is there. So meditation is the effort to remedy that problem, because that is the glitch that keeps us from going through the gate. You have to attain silence. And it has to be not a silence of sleep, not a silence in which you're spaced out. It has to be an alert, wakeful silence, which is why meditation is often referred to in the Advaita tradition as jagrat sushupti, deep sleep while you're awake, or waking sleep. But you have to be asleep in the sense that you're not producing any thoughts, but totally awake and aware and alert. And that's when you pass into a deeper dimension of consciousness than your ego can reach. You pass into what the yogis call the turiya state. Beyond the avastas of waking, dreaming, and deep sleep, there's a fourth state. And that fourth state, we could have added that to the list as well, is the state of having passed through the gate into that supreme consciousness. That once you're there, it's no longer even called turiya. They refer to it as turiya-titta, meaning that the other states are... turiya means the fourth state. It's not even the fourth. It's beyond that, because there are no other states. Once you pass through it, you're beyond the illusion. This is the way, the only way, to get off the wheel of life and death. It's the only way to be free of suffering. It's the only way to be free of anxiety, depression, bipolarity, psychopathic tendencies, all of the traits of narcissistic egos. It's the only way to be able to get out of that trap of false consciousness is to go through this gate by conquering your mind completely. And this is why one of the epithets of God, especially in the Kashmir or Shaivite tradition, is Mrityunjit, the conqueror of death and the conqueror of the mind of death, the mortal mind. And the mind is always trying to think in order to prove it does exist, but it's covering over a sense of lack of being. And it's only when we are in silence that we can return to the real self. And it is instantaneous. It doesn't take a lot of time. It's not like the real self is 2 miles back behind your eyes and you gotta walk back there to get there and take you a long time in meditation. No, you get there instantly. And you know what? You've probably crossed this gate 100 times already, maybe even 100 times a day. The problem is you cross it and immediately go back. Why would that be? Why would you go back? Well, it happens to you probably in every meditation, so you know, you have your own experience of this. And the reason you don't stay on the right side of the gate is you can't handle the bliss. You can't tolerate it. The ego loves its suffering, and suffering is who it is. It's its signature. It loves its complaints. It loves its projections. It loves its traumas. It gives it a story, a beautiful narrative, a history, a sense of existence that it can begin to analyze and use as the basis of its worldview. Give up all of that and not know who I am? Go into a state of depersonalization? No thanks. You see, the ego will immediately go back. And so that's the question, is how do you overcome the tendency of the ego to go back? Go through the gate, shut it behind you, and don't look back and don't go back. That's what has to happen if you want freedom in this life. And this is the last lifetime of the cycle of time. We're at the end of Kali Yuga. Literally, it's now or never. If you do not become liberated in this lifetime, which will be very short, much shorter than you would expect your biographical life to last if you have a young body, because the world is soon not going to be here to sustain that body. And so the amount of time that remains is very limited, and no one knows their karma. You could be very healthy and still get into a car accident or an airplane accident or anything, right? There's a million ways of suffering terminal karma. And if you haven't achieved liberation, well, that's it for this cycle. I don't say that to create fear, but to inspire those who want to do it, don't delay. Why put it off? To delay it at any to any extent is basically to say no thanks. To pass through this gate is almost impossible to do unless your hair is on fire, as they say. And if you don't, well, your beard is on fire if you don't have the top knot. But in India, this is a phrase that's used, but the point is this has to be your top priority. In fact, your only priority. This is the goal of life. Do it now. If you have that intention and you are determined to reach that state, you will make all the effort required to become effortless. And it takes a huge amount of effort. But what is the effort? The effort is to sit there without thinking, but in a state of realization that the self that you are is nothing to do with the body, has nothing to do with that thinking apparatus that wants to stay on and has no off button. You are not that. You are the self that is awareness of that and of everything else, but the awareness is not truly identifiable with the body form. And once you realize even the soul level of consciousness, you know you've had a whole series of bodies. This is not your first. It's the last in a long line. And it's the least beautiful, powerful, intelligent, and capable, and wealthy, and all of that, of all of your lives, because we have come down from a golden age into this iron age. If we want to achieve the fullness of our potentiality, we have to let go of this ego identity that cripples our capacity to realize the awesome potentials of consciousness when it has been liberated from false ideas. And since all the ideas of the ego are false, there has to be a total silencing of the mind for an extended period in order to achieve liberation. Now, if you read the Netra Tantra, which is one of the early canonical writings of the Kashmir Shaivite wisdom schools, it is said very clearly, and I believe it's accurate, that you must sit in total silence in a thought-free state, uninterrupted, for a period of 48 minutes. That's not that much. 48 minutes, that's all. And that will get you through the gate and through the gross sanskaras of the ego that will have been dissolved in that period. And you will be in soul consciousness. Now, Abhinavagupta wrote a whole commentary on this statement in chapter 8 of the Netra Tantra, and he said, actually, you have to go through three consecutive 48-minute periods. One to go through the ego, the second to get through the soul and all of its sutratmic content. There's a lot of information that the soul is carrying that also has to be dissolved, and a lot of unfinished gestalts that have to be released. And then finally, to reach that state where you're established in God consciousness and liberation and there's no return. So, but I doubt that very many right now could sit for 48 minutes in a thought-free state. For most people, it's a few seconds. For some, they're up to a minute or a few minutes. If you can get to 48 minutes, you will have conquered the mind. And in that conquering of the mind, many siddhis are gained. That, however, I'm not going to go into in this retreat. Those powers can also be a trap because they can reactivate the ego to want to use them for egoic purposes. But liberation is the one goal that comes with all kinds of goodies as byproducts, but don't go for the byproducts. Go for the gold. You want God. You want the infinite, blissful intelligence, love, and freedom. At least I do. I would hope that you would want that. Sooner or later, you will all want that. But if you're not willing to sit in silence for an extended period and gain the willpower to keep your mind silent, forget it. It won't happen. There's no point in being at an ashram if you're not willing to do that, if that's not your purpose, because that's the purpose of a community like this, is to provide a situation where we can all every day meditate at 4 a.m., because that's the ideal time. It's in the, what they call the sandhya, between the night and the day. It's at that time that the energies of the vortex of time and space come together to make it possible to go beyond. All meditation is based on this sandhya principle. So you want to focus on the kumbhaka, for example. It's the moment between the in-breath and the out-breath. And that's when the mind and the body are most silent. And you want to extend the kumbhaka, that state between the two. So the best times to meditate are both before sunrise and after sunset, as we do in the evenings. And this ashram is specifically programmed to maximize the capacity for you to reach that that state of nirvikalpa samadhi. But that's not enough, because you could be able to sit in silence in meditation, and the moment you get up, your mind will start chattering again. The old habit patterns go on. Your ego takes over when you're at work, and you have glitches and power struggles and all kinds of things, and you're mad at some people, and you're colluding with others, and all of these things will take you completely away back to square one. So we have to be in a state that is referred to as sahaja samadhi. This means the state in which we are in samadhi while the body is working, while it's eating, while it's acting in all kinds of ways, and you stay in that inner silent meditative state. So an ashram is not a social club. We're not here to get to know each other's egos. It's very important that you do not leak out. Don't, if you're a visitor here and you're new here, do not try to tell your story to people. Your story is what you're trying to get away from. Don't believe it, and don't try to get others to believe it. It's all an illusion. We want to be free of narratives. If you have something really important to share or to speak about the knowledge and clarify any points that are unclear, yes. But to sit and connect only at an ego level will disconnect you from the real and bring you back into darkness and death and the loss of immortality, the loss of the real. So this is something you have to do not as a hobby and part-time. This is full-time, 24/7 work. You have to go to sleep in this state. So you remain alert and awake in the light while in deep sleep. And if there are dreams, in a lucid dreaming state. This is a process of conquest of the mind that requires tremendous focus. There are very few people living at the ashram who have that interest at all. Very few serious meditators here. I hope online that there are more, and I hope that the visitors are. But let me ask you now, having heard this, how many of you would come into that category where, yes, this is your top priority, I want liberation now? How many? Yeah? Okay. Wonderful. It's very rare. And those who want it, I will give you whatever special help to enable you to get through any obstacles. There are certain egoic resistances that sometimes do require being dealt with in a dyadic form. This, in fact, is the main purpose of our opinology sessions. Get rid of all the gross veils of the ego, all of its attachment to its narratives and its projections and all of that. Vent it out, but understand it and get to the root of it and recognize it as delusion. So you don't stay in the ego. You realize it's a fabrication, and you can release it. And then you'll be able to get into soul consciousness, that neti-neti state, where you realize you're not this, you're not that, you're nothing. You enter the shunyata, the emptiness. But that emptiness, if you just stay in the first level of it, will not bring you to the bliss of God consciousness. It will bring you only to a kind of purgatory. And then from there, you have to go deeper into the silence to reach the fullness, the purnatva. So if you want that, come to every meditation, come to every evening class, come to every midday class, and sit for 48 minutes without producing any thoughts. Obviously, it may take time to get there. You may do it for 1 minute the first day and 3 or 4 minutes the next and 5 and 10. Once you start the ball rolling, it actually gets easier because once you can tolerate the bliss, which is really the problem, and the infinite sense of not being, not existing as a person any longer, but as just pure presence. Once you can tolerate that, then you become so timeless it no longer, there's no obstacle at the level of time and space. But there is a level of resistance that in the beginning will be very strong, and you will have to use all of your icha, your willpower, to be able to overcome it. This becomes easier if you add to willpower love of God, love of the self as God and God as the self. If there is that adoration, then the energy of that love will connect you to the self, and you will feel the grace of the self's return of that love filling you with shakti, filling you with power to stay in silence and in full presence. And then that shakti will gradually... Shakti is the highest level of divine energy. It becomes stepped down in the body and becomes prana or qi in the Chinese traditional approach. The prana is there to keep the cells alive and to have all the cellular information communicated appropriately and the organs all saturated with energy. But certain pranic nadis or meridians can get cut at certain points due to the manomaya kosha, the mental bodies, having certain negative thoughts that will get somatized, and these create symptoms of physical illness, etc. But they can also have subtle effects on the prana. When the shakti comes in, it steps up the prana. It turns it into what the Shaivites call pranana. It's an excess of prana. It becomes almost shakti. And instead of just running in these little rivers, it becomes a total energy field of light that you become encased in. Your auric field becomes much stronger, and it can keep out negative energies and negative spirits, etc. And that energy field then is able to take in even more shakti and break through the whole structure of the ego and bring one into non-duality and sat-chit-ananda and be able to enable you to sustain that until any tendency to fall back into the ego mind is overcome. So that's the process. It's very hard work. This is not a game, and it's not something to be taken lightly and occasionally. And your ego will do whatever it can to convince you it's impossible, or it's not worth it, or it's a fantasy, or I have too many issues, or maybe later, or maybe after I make some money, or get the girlfriend I want or whatever, then I'll take this up seriously, but not yet. Well, that not yet becomes a sanskara, and it becomes never. So it really is now or never, and now is the state you must be in, total presence. And at every now, the gate is open. So this is the path, this is the work required to get there, and everyone can do it. We're designed to be able to do it, but you're only going to do it if your entire will, your entire heart, your entire mind are given over to the attainment of this goal. If you have other things that are more interesting or as interesting to you as liberation, it won't work. Your various internal dissociated ego fragments will steal sufficient amounts of mental energy that you won't have enough to focus to break through the mental chatter barrier. So it has to be done wholeheartedly and one-pointedly and consistently. You can't have that gung-ho spirit one day and the next day, I'm too tired, or, you know, I got other things to think about. No, it has to be constant. And it has to be practiced while you're at work and while you are eating and while you're doing whatever you're doing in life. It's not just to be when you're on the zafu. It has to be constant. And the good news is that when you are in that state of inner silence, you also receive guidance from the inner guru. You receive the energy of the Tao. You receive the knowledge of how to navigate through this world illusion. And life becomes very simple and very clear and very filled with contentment. You're no longer restless and peaceless and confused. There's clarity, luminous clarity, and there is complete satisfaction and contentment with life. It's all perfect. So the secondary gains, the side benefits of this happen very quickly, and they make life much easier, more beautiful, and much more meaningful than it is when you're in the ego mind. But it is a total focus that is required. See how we're doing with time. So the gate is, we could say, an archetypal, architectonic structure that sustains the illusion of unreality. When you go through the gate, that structure is gone, and all is perceived with a heightened perception of the divine nature of everything that is, and therefore the equality of it all. We are equal in the sense that none of us are real on the phenomenal level. If you're in the ego mind and within duality, no one is real. Shunyamurti is not real. In fact, there is, 30 or so Shunyamurtis in the room and probably many more online. Everyone has their own projection. Who is this character? There is none. That's why the name is Shunya. It's empty. But everyone is Shunyamurti. Everyone is really empty behind the facade of the narrative and the game that the ego likes to play. But behind it, there is just emptiness. You don't know who you are. And you aren't anyone. You're, as a Sufi book said, you are nobody, son of nobody, or daughter of nobody. But there is no real truth to your being, your existence as a phenomenal person in the world. It's a fabrication. It's a play. It's acting a part of a character. You want to become free of that in order to be able to change the character, to make it more noble, more powerful, more not only authentic, but more authoritative and more capable and more filled with joy and love and intelligence. All of that, to make life successful, you have to break free of the character that was created when you were a child. It's not adequate to your needs as an adult. So even if you don't want liberation, if you just want a successful life, you still have to break through the ego and reach at least the soul level in order to modify it. Because you can't modify the sanskaras of the ego from within the ego. That's why psychotherapy doesn't work. You have to reach at least soul consciousness to be able to begin a true self-transformation process, where the same patterns will repeat over and over again. So if you're serious about even just being happy in this life, forget spiritual liberation, you still have to go through this process. It's the only way. You won't get there through taking ayahuasca. That will just create actually more illusions. And your interpretation of the information you receive will not be accurate. Your ego cannot understand the truth. It cannot grasp it as long as it's in split-mind duality. So all of those substances, whether DMT, THC, psilocybin, whatever, they do have some effect on shifting the vibrational frequency of consciousness, but none of them will get you to that supreme vibrational frequency that is attained only through the silence that you achieve through your own willpower to transcend the ego. So that's my harangue for this evening, and I'm hoping that it will inspire some who were on the fence of the gate but not sure they wanted to go through it, and some who hadn't even considered taking it all that seriously. But if you do take it seriously, it may cause you to change some of your plans in life. And if so, that may also be a blessing. So there's a lot more explicate order material to say to you during this retreat. But I want to emphasize that the talk is cheap and most of it won't go in. What's important is the practice. Okay? So I'm laying it on the line for you. That's all that ultimately matters in this alchemical work. So I'll stop talking and open the floor to anyone who has a question or a comment. By the way, I'd never welcomed our visitors. Welcome belatedly, and I hope this hasn't been too hard a beginning talk for you to handle, but we're here to speak truth and to put you on the right path and not to coddle the ego. So we have to be very serious and very mature if we want to make it through that gate. And that's why I'm here, to help you to do that and for you to become bodhisattvas who help others to do that. But you have to do it. And you can't do it through just devotion of praying to God. You have to realize you are that. Okay? Non-duality is not a luxury of an idea. You have to take very seriously. You know, we have three mantras that we repeat very often in Sat Yoga. Om Namah Shivaya, that's the first one. Yes. I bow to Shiva, I surrender to God, I give my life to God, my mind, my heart, everything. That's stage one. But stage two is Shivoham. Shiva is I. My real self is Shiva. That's what you have to focus on. Not asking Shiva for help. The love of Shiva will connect you to the fact that Shiva is yourself. And then Tat Sat, right? Tat means all of that, the whole world is Sat. All of it is Shiva. All of it is the one intelligence. There is nothing else. And you were never anything else but that. So there's no one even doing the practice. Even that is an illusion that has to be dropped. And then it becomes effortless when you know that you're not someone trying to do it, even though you may start needing that illusion to get the energies moving, but they are actually moving because of grace of God moving them, not having anything to do with the ego, because the ego has no free will. Your ego could say, yes, I'm going to do it 1,000 times, and then the next day you forget, and you're back in old habit patterns. Until that grace arrives, no ego resolutions will have any power. So surrender is important for the first stage, but then the realization. I am that. Aham aham, I am I, the one I. And then all is revealed. Okay, so floor is open, and Purusha, you probably want to tell us about what's happening on the love stream.
Thank you, Shunya, for that teaching. We have people joining us from all over the world right now. We have people tuning in from Ireland, Denmark, Ethiopia, the U.S., the U.K., Germany, Costa Rica, Canada, the Netherlands, and Sweden. And we're welcoming you all to the retreat. We have one question so far to begin the questions.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
This is from Caroline. Do all humans have thoughts of suicidal ideation? I'm finding these thoughts come and go on a regular basis.
I wouldn't say that all have such thoughts, no. If one is in the ego consciousness, the ego does contain a lower death drive that can be triggered to produce suicidal thoughts under whatever psychological conditions become unbearable to continued existence, to facing the horror of what people have done with their lives. But actively suicidal thoughts, no, that is something that should be dealt with and eliminated and turned into an upper death drive of realizing that what must die is not your body but your ego. And you have to kill your ego while you're alive, because if you don't do that, your body will die but your ego will reincarnate with the same sanskaras that will keep you suicidal in the next life instead of becoming liberated. So it's extremely important to eliminate such tendencies and sublimate them and turn them into their spiritual opposite, so that that same energy is used to bring you to freedom rather than to extinguishing the consciousness that has the spark of divine nature from being able to express itself. Okay. Is there anyone here with a question? Please feel free to go to the magic chair. I think they have a microphone, and sit in the hot seat or the cool seat. And
I feel very happy to be here.
Good. What's your name?
Dahlia.
Dahlia. Welcome, Dahlia.
Thank you. Do you have any tips on how to... I mean, I've been meditating for many years, and it comes sometimes to the point... It doesn't always have to be a meditation. Sometimes it's even just... It was a few days ago when we were watching your teaching where... I just lose this all sense of self, and I get scared.
Uh-huh. Who gets scared? If there's no self, there's no one to get scared. So what you're saying is you reach the fear of losing yourself. You reach a point of that depersonalization is dead ahead, and then you want to retract from that, right? So what you have to do is feel the fear from the state of pure awareness that witnesses and knows it's not your fear. Self is fearless. Okay. And then what will die into that is simply the illusory ego self. That will die, but you'll remain aware. And then what remains is just pure energy and blissful light. And then you're free. But you do have to go through the terror and cross through that. And that is the final barrier that stops most beings from making this journey.
I think you've mentioned in the lecture we listened to that you said you can reassemble yourself afterwards. So if you want to, you will be able to function, okay? So you can use the ego. Well, that was really helpful. So
yes.
I can count on that.
Well, you see, what dies is your identification with the body and with the mental apparatus and its narratives. But what doesn't die are all the skills that you have gained, right? So your ability to function is actually increased because you've eliminated all the projections and the false ideas and the limitations of your ability to use those skills properly. and you become much more effective and efficient in life, and work that would have taken 5 hours because of a scattered mind, you'll do in 5 minutes and then meditate the rest of the day. So you'll be much better able to use time than you were before, but you'll be in a completely neutral state. There'll be no more interest in the character. Your mind is now focused in the light, and you're barely here. But what is here is 10 times more effective than what was here before, and everything goes without a glitch.
But are there different levels as well? Because I remember having, you know, been able to sustain a certain time where it's just all like luminous, and I don't feel it, like I don't feel there's a self anymore. I can't explain. Maybe I'm not using the same terminology as you are. It was possible to use to be in that state without freaking out. But then again, all of a sudden, I am. So it's kind of don't understand. Does that?
No, you know, this is very common that people will have an experience of a satori or a kensho, to use the Zen phrase, that will create a temporary enlightenment. It can go on for a week or 10 days or a month or something, and then gradually the energy goes back down and you're back where, when you say, what happened? I lost it, right? That's all, very common. Okay. And it happens because of good karma or having purified some impurity that suddenly opens you up to freedom, to change and to being somebody different, someone new from what you were. And then that can open up into just beautiful depersonalization of a very benign and beautiful kind. And you'll think, I'm enlightened, I'm liberated, it's done, right? And that thought can come. And that's the sign that you're already starting to lose it again, right? Yeah. But that state is real. It's not that is an illusion or a fantasy. But what happened was it was a temporary gift of grace that the merit ran out that would have sustained it, and now you've got to do it on your own for real without the help of that karmic assistance, and then it's done permanently.
Okay. I think that's really scary. I think I don't know if I'm ready for that. Do you know what I mean?
But you see, that's the ego talking. Yeah. No ego is ever ready for it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? You have to know that narrative is false and don't believe it.
Okay.
If you believe your own mind, you're lost. Because your ego mind will do everything it can to convince you that you're not ready for this.
Okay.
And if you buy it, you're not ready for it. You've made that your reality. It's not true, though. Okay. And that's my purpose here, is to keep reminding you that it isn't true and don't fall for it. Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else? No questions online? Okay. Well, actually, that's good timing. Let's see. We'll meet again at 5 a.m. for a silent meditation. So really take seriously staying in the thought-free state for as much of that time as you can. And if every 2 minutes thoughts start coming, don't get mad about it. Don't get upset. That's the worst thing you can do. Just say stop, or who am I, and remember that you're here to be in a thought-free state. Go back to the silence. And every time the thoughts start, just go back to the silence until the ego gets the message. You're not interested in its thoughts. And then they will start to come less often and they'll weaken. And then as you have an expanse of silence, many things may come up, like terror may come up, but also joy will come up and light and energy and some very extreme paranormal things happen once you're in silence for several minutes at a time and longer. Don't get distracted by them. Don't get afraid of them, but don't get captured by visions that you may have or anything else. Stay in the thought-free state. This too will pass. And you want to get to that state of the changeless, eternal, supreme presence, not any lower intermediary state. Don't use your imagination or get caught with visions of angelic realms or archons or anything else. Those kinds of presences may arise in the consciousness. Many things may arise. Don't react to anything, and don't focus on anything except the self, which cannot be focused on as an object. Okay, so this is the problem of the ego. It wants to focus on something it can grasp. That's why it wants to worship an icon or look at a candle flame or repeat a mantra or do something else to focus on. You have to meditate without any focus, without any support, without any dependency on a thought or an image or a feeling or anything. There has to be that total letting go of everything, including, as especially, the I, the thought I, the representation I. But let go of everything. And that's what brings you into the dimension of the real. Okay, I hope this is helpful to you. But have no qualms or judgments about your meditation. Don't go afterwards, I had a terrible meditation. Don't create those thoughts. It doesn't matter if you couldn't keep a thought-free state for more than 10 seconds. Doesn't matter. Just keep working on it. It will expand. And keep doing it as an act of love of God and love of yourself, which is the same, and love of freedom and love of the real. And you will become free, because we are designed to be able to do that. So don't believe any thoughts that tell you otherwise. Okay? All right. Blessings to you all for self-liberation. Namaste.